This is the world broadcast of Imam Waris Deen Muhammad Speaks, the program that's dedicated to human dignity and justice. And now, Imam Waris Deen Muhammad.
I hope God bless us with guidance and understanding. I hope He bless me to be able to express my thoughts clearly to you. And I hope He bless you to receive my thoughts in the proper way. I don't intend any mockery. I don't intend any destructive criticism. So if you might hear that or feel that, please know that I don't intend that. Everything that I do and say is for the sake of improving upon us and not merely criticizing.
Dear beloved Muslims, visitors and friends, the greetings of peace to you. Assalamu alaikum. Praise be to Allah, the guardian evolver, the cherisher and sustainer of all the world. I bear witness that nothing is worthy of worship except Him alone. And I bear witness that Muhammad is His servant and His messenger. I thank Allah that I was able to come out here for the holiday week, holiday season. I hadn't planned to come out here, really, but some matters came up that I felt were urgent and required my presence here at home. So I came home, really, to be with my family. And then I said, boy, this is Juma and this is Christmas. And Christmas fell on Juma, you know. So I said, I better prepare because he just might want me to speak. So when I got here, first thing he said, would you give the Juma for us today, buddy man? And I said, yes. And I was very happy to be here. And now again, on this Sunday, I have another opportunity to speak with you. And I thank Allah again. You know, I have come to really like or enjoy the study of words, language. And every so often, I run into a word that catches my attention. And I just work with it and work with it to see what's to it. And usually there's more to it than meets the eye. You know, we are used to the term lemon. We know that what a lemon is. A lemon is fruit. A bitter tasting fruit. But we like it. When I was a child, whenever I saw a lemon, I thought they were getting ready to make sour water. We called it sour water, you know. And after I got older, I learned that the word lemon had another meaning. It meant a letdown, a disappointment, something that ain't what you thought it was. And I bought a car, and it was a lemon, too. And I should have known better because it was yellow. They had it in the showroom. It was already yellow. Already yellow. The dealer was trying to tell the customer something. So I bought it. It sure enough turned out to be a lemon. I wonder, I said, well, I began to think about the word lemon. I said, why would they use a lemon to convey that kind of meaning? I start thinking, I looked the word up in the dictionary. tried to find its history, where the word came from, where its origin is, you know. And before I finished my search, I just came to the conclusion that the word must have been influenced by Semitic usage. Semitic usage is Jews, Arabs, and others. In fact, many people, the people of the Middle East, most of them have the Semitic influence in the language, or the language are Semitic. When I say lemon. What are they? I know what they're saying now. They're saying that moral consciousness in a person is worthless, a disappointment. Because, you know, one who feels regret, if he feels sorry for his wrong, then in our language, that kind of self or makeup in a person is lawama, repentant nature in the person. Lama means to accuse, and one who feels the burden of accusation is that kind of self that feels the burden of accusations is lawama. And you know the sound un can easily be put to any Arab word or Semitic word. It doesn't change the word. It just means that it's used in a certain way, grammatically. So, lame, lama, you know the word lame? Lame means crippled. And lame means one blamed, or accused, feeling the burden of accusation, you see? So I trace the word back there. And look now, if that's true, then what are they saying when they say, when the southern people told us that lemonade was sour water? Sour water. See, it's sour water. And all the southerners drank sour water. And our folks who came from the south, they drank sour water too, you know, just love sour water. Now you think of sour water. Sour is a pig too. Just spelled different. Sour is a pig, you know. Sour water. Water for the pigs. See? Sour water. Water for the pigs. Now, I'll go back to what lemon means. It means moral consciousness. Of the nature to feel burden when you are accused. Conscious person. Conscientious person. You see? Now, how do I know I'm right in this thinking? Because I traced other words back, and I found they say the same thing. Belial refers to the sensitive nature of the human soul, the name Belial. In the Bible, Belial, spelled a little different, is called a worthless thing, something having no use, no worth. Okay. So why would they call that something has no worth? Sensitivity in the soul is the nature of moral consciousness. When the soul is not sensitive, there's no moral consciousness. How can you be morally conscious and your soul is not even sensitive? You see? So that sensitivity that we have in the name Belial is the same that you have in the nature of the lawama, the person who feels the burden of accusation. And we know most of us don't like to be accused by our society. You know, we want to be approved. We want approval. We want to be accepted. We don't want to be accused. Now, if somebody can become so insensitive in their makeup that they don't even care whether they're accused or not, don't even care whether they're accepted or not, don't care about what other people think about them. And they can do some awful, terrible things. Yes. And there is a mind in the world that believes to achieve your ends, you can't be bothered with moral questions. To achieve your ends, you have to dismiss all moral sentiments. You can't be Belial. You can't be Belalian. Belalian means having that nature of Belial. You see? You can't be Belalian. You can't be a lemon. You know, a lemon is something that has a great amount of sugar. A lot of us don't know that, but in science they tell you that. A lemon is a fruit with a great amount of sugar, but its acid is so bitter that it dominates. So when you taste it, you taste nothing but bitterness. You taste just bitterness. But you like it, don't you? Little children, you cut a little piece of lemon for a little child, you know, and the little child suck on the lemon. Why they like it? They like it because it has sweet. The sweet is in there. And though they taste the bitterness, the sweet is there too. And the senses know the sweet is there. So they like the lemon because the sweet is there. If there wasn't no sweet there, they wouldn't like the lemon. They don't want the bitter without sweet. But the bitter with the sweet make them like it. They like it. And the wise people have used certain objects as symbols for ideas that they have. So the lemon has been used as an idea, representation of that bitter and sweetness that is in our taste. Human being feels regret, but he dislikes regrets at the same time. He gives in to repentance, but he doesn't like to be sad. But he'll become sad in his repentant state, right? He becomes very sad and weeps sometimes some terribly. But he doesn't like sadness, but at that time, a little bitter is good for him. And after weeping, he begins to feel relieved. He's relieved by it. And he becomes even sweeter, right? Sometimes he becomes even sweeter, you see, after that repentant stage. Then some give themselves to self-pity to extreme. And they weep and they weep and they weep in self-pity. And instead of coming out sweet, they come out more bitter. Very bitter. They may even harden up to where they have no sympathy for anybody. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Crying your own blues can make you hard if you stay in there too long. You know, you got to know when to pull out of that. You know. Pull out, so let me get myself together. I got obligations. If you stay in it too long, you get hard. You become hardened to everything but yourself. And that's mentioned in the Quran, that there will come a time when people will not care for mom, dad, sister, brother, husband, wife, daughter, son. They won't care. They won't feel any obligation. They'll be so wrapped up in their own affairs that they'll be heedless of others. This is the Quran. It's good to know yourself. And you can better manage yourself when you know yourself. And Allah wants us to know ourselves. That's why He revealed the knowledge. He wants us to know ourselves. A big problem we have in this world is a belief that the best way to protect the welfare, the general welfare, is to become insensitive and do whatever you must do at any cost to preserve the order of the establishment. So there come times when you have to sacrifice principles that you worked very carefully and very tediously to build up. You have to tear down those principles, tear them down, and put new ideas into people's minds that will accommodate what you have to do for the situation, you know. This is the kind of world we live in, where even morals are manipulated. Yes. They give you a set of morals today for this situation, this time. Now, next year, it might be a different demand. So they give you a new set of morals. You tear down one of those that they gave you before and give you a new set. We thank Allah we don't have to live in a situation like that. We thank Allah that we have a religion that accommodates all of our needs. We don't have to go to the world for life. Our life is in our religion. And that's what Muslims should know. And non-Muslims, they can benefit from it, whether they be Muslims or not. They can benefit from knowing that. But Muslims should know, and Muslims should obey what their religion requires, or ask of them. In the beginning of the 20th century, a new idea was brought in to keep the life of the Western world in pretty workable form. That idea is called in the dictionary expressionism. And it was an idea that was used in the field of art, expression. And what they did was direct the artist to express in his art everything that goes on in the person, in the inner, in the inward form of the person. So what you experience in your thoughts, you know, what you think privately, express this outwardly in art. So that was a way of stripping the human being, making him naked. Naked in a sinful way. Present him in art, completely nude. Without an effort to educate, it wasn't an effort to educate now. This is just purely for entertainment, purely for the gratification of the senses. To present this in art. There's another form that has as its object the correction of moral attitudes. And they will depict in art many things that happen within our private, within the private sphere of the individual. In order to shame the individual and shame the society out of its unbecoming behavior or conduct. That's a different form. But then expressionism is not that form. Expressionism is bringing it out just for the sake of excitement, just for the sake of attracting people, exciting people, capturing their interest. You see? So as a result, the art of the Western world became really shameful art. Shameful art that appealed to the lower mind of the individual. Nudity, perversion, cruelty. Freakishness, abnormal appetite, abnormal behavior. Everything that was possible for the individual to conceive, the artist was directed to put that, make that visual so that everybody could see it. I think that's pretty devilish. That was a pretty wicked thing to do. Especially if they were believers in God, because God gave us a privacy, and he said that that privacy is sacred, and no one should invade that privacy. That privacy is between the individual and his Lord. It is not to be exposed to the society. That's respect for the individual. Does anyone want all of his shame disclosed? No. No sensible person want all of his shame disclosed. But this is the effort of Satan to discredit the human being. Yes, that was his promise. That he would go out to prove man not deserving of the high station that God gave him. That was his promise, that he would go out to prove man unworthy. And the language that Iblis used in the Quran let us know that he thought us to be a despicable thing. Say, this that you have fashioned in the shape of stinky mud, saying that the mortal man is just stinky earth. That the only mind capable of anything worthwhile is one that does not give himself to the influences of moral man, to sentiment, or to moral conscience. That was his attitude. And he went about to prove that man that is motivated by that kind of nature is worthless, inferior, worthless. There is another ism, also a creation of Western society, or made popular by Western society in this day and time, this history, is sensualism. Sensualism. And we know that we have senses that we would like to have gratified. If we feel pain in the stomach from hunger, we want to eat to gratify that need, to satisfy that appetite, to rest that pain of that aggravation that we call hunger. If we have an urge for sex, we like to have that rested in gratification of that appetite. So man is a sensorial being in his makeup. He is influenced by senses, in the biological form, or in his physical form. But the devil, he goes out to exploit that need and make it a burden too great for the man to carry it. Then the man becomes a subject of his own nature, a captive of his own nature. That's the work of Satan. We're not talking about any spook somewhere. We're not talking about Satan that Walt Disney created or Sinbad the Sailor created or something like that. No. We're talking about real life matters. So there was born an ism, sensualism. And the idea that to gratify your senses, your physical senses, or the senses generally, but mainly speaking from the physical point of view, that to gratify the senses is the highest good. The highest good. Now think about Western society. Think about the life that we have, we call Western world or Western society. Haven't it advanced these things? And haven't life been dominated and oppressed by the advancement of these things that we're talking about right now? It ain't enough to just have sex like your instincts urge you to. They have to use their liberated faculties of reasoning to make inventions after their imaginations and create for you life behavior that you'll never, that your nature never asked for. You know, the American Indian, I was in prison for selective service violation. At that time, you know, we didn't go to army. In the days of the Temple of Islam, we didn't go to army. And so I was, I applied for conscious objector status. I got it. They ordered me to go do hospital work then. As a conscious objector, they say, well, go do hospital work. So they ordered me to go to Elgin State Hospital to do work as a conscious objector. I refused that too, because the Honorable Elijah Muhammad didn't seem to favor it. He didn't say don't do it, but he didn't seem to favor it, so we obeyed him, you know. In the days of the temple, that's what the way it was. So we didn't do it, so they sent me to jail in Sandstone, Minnesota, Federal Correctional Institution. Nice little mild place, a good rest stop, really. They sent me there, and there I met Indians, because that's up near the Dakota, you know. So I met a lot of Indians up there. And one Indian, he told me, he said, you know, we knew nothing about oral sex until the white man came to this land. I said, I thought it was like that. I think my father said that once too. Yeah, he said, ain't knew nothing about no oral sex till the white man came to this country. It was a Western man. Buying the wicked schemes of the Jacobites and applying it, operating as the hand of the Jacobites. See, the Jacobite, he's too dignified to do it with his own hand. So he keeps his own hands out of it. And he manipulates the Western man's mind and uses the Western man as his hand. Yeah, no all sex. human being and natural sex, say, show affection, have natural sex. Family dignity is not built on that. It's built on what they call the principle, the hidden science of materialism. Dialectic materialism. That the material world has a certain nature. And that matter has advanced because of this dual nature in itself. A kind of contradiction. This is how they explain it. That there is a force working in nature that seems to be a contradiction. But this contradiction, this conflict, is what advances matter. So they pattern the human life and human social life on that same pattern. And they say in order for man to progress, he must be constantly at odds with something. If they have nothing to be at odds with, they have no communist program. It's built on, they say, struggle. But what kind of struggle? Struggle that requires conflict. Sure, we believe in struggle too. Muslims believe in struggle. One of our major principles is struggle, jihad. But our struggle is not built on that idea. Our struggle is built on the idea of unity. Unity. Not conflict. Theirs built on the idea of conflict. And that you must promote conflict because conflict is needed to keep the struggle alive. So they have a propaganda machine. And the purpose of the propaganda machine is just to create problems. Create clashes. Create pockets of hostility. Create divisiveness. So that we will have something to attack. We have to keep our men on the attack. The life of our ideology is conflict. And look at Mao Zedong, how he interpreted what he said. Liberty or something like that come out of the barrel of a gun. Violent conflict. Yeah, he made the idea in the party violent conflict. He didn't invent it. He got it from Marx. Yes. So that's the idea. When they started out, first thing they had to do was put the people through what they call the process. Processing. When they taking it out of you, taking all that you got in you out. Now, brainwashing, but it's another name for it. I can't think of it. Programming. Deprogramming. Deprogramming. First thing they had to do was deprogram the people. Then after they deprogram the people, they program the people. They first have to make you care nothing about anything but their ideology. If you had loyalty to God, they had to break that down. They had to tear it, get that out of you. If you had feeling for God, get it out of you. If you had loyalty to your family, you got to get that out of you. They got to destroy all attachments in the deprogramming process. Any idea you had that doesn't fit in? They have to destroy that idea. Break it down. Destroy it. Those that couldn't be deprocessed, they had to be killed outright. They had to kill them outright. So after they deprocess you, then they begin to process you. Once you are emptied of all that you believed or all that you held dear, whatever you attach yourself to, once you have emptied yourself of everything you attach yourself to, then they introduce the communist program. According to your ability to accept it and be trustworthy. Right? In other words, it depends on the extent that the programming affected, the deprogramming affected you. If they detect that maybe the deprogramming was not complete in you, they won't trust you with both so much.
But if it was complete, you get all, you get as much as you can take, all of it. So then they program you, and now you're a new person. You're a communist. You're a member of the Communist Party. And you can go shoot your mother with no feelings. You can go to the house and blow your mother's brains out with no feelings. You can go and wipe your children out, wipe your family out with no feelings. You can go and blow the priest's brains out that worked with you and your mother and helped you all, came to your rescue when nobody else would. You can go and blow the priest's brains out with no feelings whatsoever, no emotions at all. That's communism. All right? Am I right or wrong? Is that communism? I believe that's communism. Anybody know something different? Let me know. Here's your chance, baby. Don't go behind my back and say what you know. Tell me right now. Okay, that's communism. All right. Now, may not be your local brand. But your local brand doesn't have a direct phone line. You can't make a direct call. In fact, you can't even get a call through. I know. Now, if that's communism now, tell me, where is socialism in that program? Where is socialism? You gonna kill all the social nature to create a mechanical family? How can you call that socialism? So kill the social nature now to create a social family. My social nature tell me to love my relatives. My social nature has guided me to worship something greater than man. Now you're going to kill that and create a brotherhood governed by material principles and subject to inhuman authority. And inhuman authority. Oh, but look what the communist people have done. They go and they give aid to the third world and they help liberate black people. That's what you think. They go over there and they bribe them to come under their regime. As soon as they come under that regime, they lose all of their dignity, they lose all of their principles, they lose all of their authority. We know. You think God has blessed me to know the Bible and I don't know the world? The Bible was before this world. They are not socialists. They are materialists. Now let's look on this side of the world at the capitalists. The capitalist, he pretends like he doesn't exist. Everybody's talking about him, but he just act like he never heard a word they said. What are you talking about? So the capitalist is just somebody that doesn't exist, you know. See, what are you talking about? Always talking about the capitalist. What are you talking about? You know, they say, well, the capitalist is America, England, so-called democratic world. Okay, well, they can't reach us. They say the capitalist. We don't hear the capitalist. You know, what are you talking about? You know, the message can't register as well. Because ain't nobody coming out defending capitalism. Nobody comes out to defend capitalism. Nuh-uh. The capitalist, he sits back. Let's look at what he gives us now for a life. He tells us you're free. He doesn't claim to be a socialist. He claims to be a liberalist, a liberator. He claims to be a Republican. I don't mean the Republican Party now. I'm talking about Republicanism as an ideology. The idea of republic meant to give authority to the people. That was the purpose of the republic, to give authority to the people. Freedom and authority to the people. So he claims to be one advocating freedom and personal dignity. Right? Yeah, that's what he claims. He claims to be the promoter, the one who advances the idea of freedom and personal dignity. That every individual should be free, should have equal rights, should have the freedom to influence the character and destiny of his government. Is that right? That's freedom. That's what they say freedom is. Every individual should have it. And the individuals should have respect from the society for his privacy. Wasn't that included in the idea of freedom? And that the privacy of the individual is sacred. Talking about what this side of the world claims now. Well, mister, if you do away with everything, well, what's left? We had enough of those leaders that's telling us everything's wrong, but can't show us what is right. It is right there. That is right there. That's right. And this man is on the right path. With that, all right? So I ain't leaving you without something. I'm telling you where something is. Telling you where the correction is. But we can't do that. How can we survive with the whole world against us? Prophet Muhammad didn't ask that question. He was grateful to his Lord. He accepted what his Lord gave him as a blessing, and he just acted on it. And look what happened. The empire came and made obeisance. Muhammad, we recognize you. Those that didn't weep in their own tears and blood. Because their own people toppled them. You think the same thing can't happen now? Those people that want good, they will accept good. Those that don't want good, the force of goodness is too much for any power on the. Now, the capitalist now, he claims to be the liberator, but he has lied too. The communist claims to be the socialist, and the thing he does says he's a liar. The Western world has claimed to be a liberator, and what they keep in operation says they are liars. If they are true liberators, how come they don't tell the truth? The main weapon of the liberator is truth. That's his main tool, it's truth. The Bible carries the image of the liberator. And the Bible shows us the liberator with truth as his main arm. Truth! And the Quran shows us the liberator. And the Quran shows us as truth, the liberator having truth as his main arm. We go back and we study the liberation process in the philosophers. And we find that truth was their main arm. Many of them had to bite the dust, go to jail, drink the poison. Had to die. They were sentenced to death, but they never gave up that right arm. Truth. Is that right? Okay, so if the West is truly the liberator, how come they lie so much? How come they thrive and survive on lies? And this ain't nothing but a fact. I don't have to quote nothing to prove that. You know by your own existence that this Western world thrives and survives on lies. They've been lying to us ever since they brought us here. They lied about our nature. They lied about our past history. They lied about our future potential in us. They lied about that. Many of them had the nerve to tell us right in our faces, "You can't, don't study that. You ain't capable of learning that. Look, try an instrument, try a horn." We have been told that by them. You might say, well, that was some individual. Who in the hell gave that mind to that individual working in that establishment? If it wasn't an establishment. They have been lying to us ever since they brought us here. A hard crook to catch. I know some of you don't like this talk. It makes you uneasy. Some of you are so tense you're gonna get hernia in your rectum. You're gonna strain a muscle back there. Relax. This ain't no dangerous movement. This is a peace movement. Believe me, this is the peace movement here. We're trying to bring peace back to people. The Emancipation Proclamation was read in the atmosphere dominated by the Republican Party. The Republican president led the battle for freedom. Later on in our history, the Democrats began to lead. Democrats take over. And the Democrats are so divided that in the South, where lynching and Jim Crow and all the ugly things were, it was perpetuated by who? The Democrats. This is history. So the main enemy were the Democrats in the South. And in the North, the Democrats, same party, they both in the same party. In the North, the Democrats leading us to freedom. Don't you know there's something wrong with that? Well, we got to be one or the other, and I ain't gonna be no Republican. Be what you want to be. It ain't nothing but a game. So go and work your strategy on the Republican machine, or work your strategy on the Democrat machine. What I'm saying is this. We should know the realities of our circumstances in this world. And we shouldn't put our faith in the Democrats, and we shouldn't put our faith in the Republicans. We should put our faith in our own experience, in our own vision, in our own Muslim ability. That's where we should put our faith. then as citizens that are required to do these things, we go and if we decide, we should decide together, though. We shouldn't have some of us voting Republican and some of us voting Democrat. We all in the same situation. We all vote together. If Democrats is one way we should vote, all of us vote Democrats. We look like fools, some of us are dividing our power. We're playing a game. We got a strategy. Okay, don't weaken our strategy. Don't weaken our game. Some gonna play the Republican machine. No, everybody play the same machine. So our strategy is united. Yeah, we shouldn't vote Republican or Democrat. You vote Republican or Democrat because of what you expect from them. Is that right? Okay. Well, now, if we decide that we can expect most from the Democrats and we say we should vote Democrat, what does anybody look like voting Republican? And none of us should be either Democrat or Republican. None of us. They say, what are you, Democrat or Republican? Say, I'm whatever looks best when the next election comes up. That's right. I ain't no Democrat or Republican. That's their thing. They running that. They choose to be Democrat or Republican. I don't know where the Republican going to be in his program the next election. I don't know where the Democrat going to be in his program next election. Well, when that time come up, I'll look at both of them and I'll decide which one promised the most or which one looked like the better risk. Yeah. Look how faithful, look how loyal we have been to the Democratic Party. And look how we've been carried on a merry-go-round. That's right, nothing but a merry-go-round. You know, a merry-go-round, the horse ain't only going around. He's also going up and down. And a song played to him as he go around. That's what it's been. The program of the capitalist is to contain. It's to contain, to harness, control, nail down, keep in check. Their program is a program of containment for the masses. The program of the communists is a program of containment for the masses. They have the same program. They just call them by different names and have slightly different ideology or slightly different principles. Seem to be. But under the bottom, at the bottom, under the surface, they're the same. Programs of containment. The Belalians that belong to the church, they contain you in the life that they designed for you. The Muslim represents a rebel force for the capitalist. The Muslim represents a rebel force. So they can't contain us with their ideology because we are in a new ideology. So how do they contain us? They send you in to influence our program, to impede our progress by manipulative movements that you make that they told you to make. They train you to come in and subvert our operations, sabotage our operations, poison and confuse the mind of our community. Frustrate our plans. Reinterpret our ideology. so that the people will hear their interpretation of our own ideology and not our own interpretation of our own ideology. They have all kind of ways that they come in and use deceitful methods and by deceit and trickery, they hold us in check. Their program is containment. They have to contain all the productive forces. And then they give them vent so that when that productive force gets vent, it feeds their machinery and not you. They have to have that. That's their program. Now, what is our fight then? What is our mission? What is our struggle? Our fight is to contain ourselves and not to allow them to contain us. And vent our forces in the direction we choose and not allow them to vent our forces in the direction they choose. In other words, our life, our mission and our program is to take our life and our forces away from them and their schemes. The weak will say you can't win, Brother Imam. I'm a winner already. I have achieved this for myself. And if I have achieved it for myself, I'm a winner already. They don't dictate my life. They don't tell me what to believe or what to think or how to feel. No, I'm free. Free at last. Oh, yes. So don't tell me it can't work. We can't win. We already got one winner. And I'm just telling you that because I think that maybe that's as far as you can see. I got a lot of people with me. We are winners. All we need is to enlarge the ranks. We need to spread the good word and enlarge the ranks. The bigger our numbers, the greater works we can do. They don't want us to have economic dignity. Never intend that we have economic dignity. And we'll do all kind of wicked, underhanded things to keep us from having economic dignity. They know moral force is one thing. Congregating is another thing. Having economic life is still another thing. And they are the materialists. The capitalists and the communists are both materialists. They are the materialists. And they contain your life by controlling your material life. They're materialists. So they control your life by controlling your material life. They want to say how much you should get. They want to tell you how to spend it when you get it. And they want to say who gets more and who gets less. If you're a morally upright man, they say he should have less. We can't trust him. He'll use material power to advance morality. And our thing ain't morality, it's material dominance. So we can't trust him. He gets less. The immoral, slimy, filthy scum of the earth, they say he gets more. I'm not talking about a hoe hopper or some weirdo freak that commits sodomy on young boys. I'm talking about the worst of all immoral criminals. The one that'll pretend to be religious.